Today's game is GoldenEye 007. Once again, is Rare going to show that they only make bad games?
I don't know what universe you live in, but we're going to find out how wrong you are now.
We are now. Welcome to Cast to the Past, the time-traveling podcast where best friends get together to talk about old games. And yes, today we are discussing GoldenEye 007, the N64 game that people really, really, really wanted to play, just as bad as they really, really, really wanted to play Chrono Cross. Does it still hold up, Tom?
And I'm Tom. Josh. So, Josh, we got to start this off with a confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
Way back in our WrestleMania 2000 episode, when we were pointing out how, you know, WrestleMania may not have aged that well, you said that GoldenEye has not aged well. And I agreed with you because, you know, we'll get into it about how this has or hasn't aged well. But you spoke with a sense of confidence of someone who has played the game.
Mm-hmm.
And
when I
you played the game for this episode.
It's true.
Do you want to repeat what you told me when I said, hey, we should do GoldenEye? Have you?
And I said, you're really going to make me play GoldenEye. And then I was said, like, what do you mean?
What do you mean? Yeah.
And I said, well, I've never played GoldenEye.
And yet you've shit-talked it, again, with the confidence of someone who has played it and been like, nah. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be doing a review. I'm kind of the retro review part, but Josh is the first-time play, the 2023 re-release. And just to clarify, what platform did you play it on?
On the Xbox Series X.
Okay. That's what I played for the re-review, but I have a long and storied history with this game. But let's go back, Josh, 1997. When you think of that year in terms of first-person shooters, what do you think of?
1997 probably would have been like the Star Wars games that were out, like the Dark Forces, the Jedi Knight series of games. Okay. I mean, they were practically Doom clones, but like everything from 1991 up until probably GoldenEye were all just Doom clones for the most part.
And those are also PC locked, you know what I mean? So it gives you a sense of how big of a deal GoldenEye was. Here was a competent first-person shooter available on consoles that gave you, you know, a pretty dynamic experience. And that's kind of the starting point of why this game has such a legacy. When you played it on the Xbox, give me your kind of honest two-sentence impression right up top. What did you think of this game as an Xbox re-release?
Man, this is a very shiny coat of paint on top of poop. It's very smooth. And it has that classic N64 PlayStation 1 polygonal people. That's about it.
So is this you did not like any of it?
I like some of the level designs.
Okay. All right. So
if that helps, can I just say something really quick?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not a big James Bond fan. I think Pierce Brosnan's one of my least favorite James Bonds out of all of them.
Okay.
And I know that's a little bit of a how dare you, because producer Becca absolutely loves Pierce Brosnan. It's her favorite Bond. But
well, let's be clear. There is a line between liking Pierce Brosnan and liking Pierce Brosnan's James Bond.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, I love Mamma Mia, Pierce Brosnan.
Exactly. So
it's great. That's great. Pierce Brosnan. He sings.
Yes, poorly, but God help him, he tries.
Hey, you know what? He does it. Where were we? We weren't there.
We were watching The Dark Knight instead.
Yeah.
They opened up the same day.
That's true. It's true. But anyway, I'm not a huge James Bond fan. And when it came to this game, it was one of those things I just was like, I don't care. Mission Impossible came out almost around the same time. And I thought that was a better spy game. Even to this day, I think that is a great spy game. And I think that has a little bit more of what the characters mean and what the characters actually stand for. Because playing this game, I didn't understand the story. All I knew was Sean Bean dies. And that's all I knew about this game.
I mean, he dies, but then he comes back.
What?
He's the bad guy. Did you really not get that?
No, but he dies and then he dies again.
Like, I mean, he does die twice. Yes.
So pop quiz, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
How many video games does Sean Bean die in?
I forget how much of Fellowship of the Ring is recapped in the EA games Twin Towers game. Oh, shit, the Two Towers game. So I guess he dies in that. So there's two.
But he did not voice
Okay. Well, what's the answer then? Because I have to think. Six. What are they?
There is a mobile game that was out on cell phones. It's a horror game where he plays a dead character, so he's already dead. Civilization VI, he is the narrator who I believe has the potential to die inside of that game as
well. How does a narrator die?
Don't ask me. I don't play those games. He is in Hitman 2 as a very pristine target that you are set to go after. And he's also in Hitman 3. As well, too.
Does that mean you fail to kill him in Hitman 2?
No, I think it's just they brought that character back as like a thing for it's like a, hey, we're bringing back people from previous games. And then there was something. Oh, he dies in this.
Right. Twice.
And there was. Yeah. Oh, and he was in Oblivion. And he dies in Oblivion.
That's right. Okay. I actually did know about that now that you've mentioned it. It was just in the back of my brain. So you brought up something that I think is really interesting is that you said that you think Mission Impossible is a better spy game. And I think that's pretty interesting in that it makes me rethink a little bit about how much of GoldenEye sometimes tries. But yeah, you're right. I don't think GoldenEye 007 is a good spy game. There is an emphasis on stealth to a little bit. You know, you have silenced weapons. There can be an advantage in exploring levels as, you know, sneakily as possible, you know, disposing of enemies without alerting other enemies. But it is very much first-person combat focused, so not very much a spy game.
It's just very interesting when I was like, when you think of James Bond, you think of the espionage and you think of all that kind of stuff. And this is just like, no, run and gun.
What did you think about the objective layouts of the levels? Like, what difficulty did you play this on? There's agent, which is easy mode, secret agent, which is normal, and 00, which is hard. But
I think granted, I just played agent just to get it, to kind of play through it.
Okay, all right. Not every level is going to have all of the objectives active. Some of them will just be the simplest ones. But what did you think overall of like what you had to do to beat each level?
Some things were a little laid out for you, and then other stuff was just so vague.
Okay.
That I was just like, I don't know what I need to do, but as long as I get one out of these three or four objectives that I got, I feel accomplished.
I think it was interesting on this replay because when I played this as a kid, I was probably around like 9 or 10 when I first played this. I probably also stuck to agent, A, because of like difficulty curve at the time, but also because, yeah, I guess maybe I didn't grasp all of the kind of complexities that the levels could offer in terms of like what you have to pay attention to. Cause like some of these objectives you can outright fail if you like destroy a certain part of a level by accident. You know what I mean? Like they can be that vague. You can blow up a computer and it's like, well, that was the computer you needed to access to do this. So you're screwed.
Yeah, there's like no waypoints or anything like that, the kind of, which is fine for, you know, older games and stuff like that. And it's like replay value is a thing and makes you go back and makes you want to constantly keep doing this over and over again. But playing it now in 2023 with what we have, you know, they talked about, oh, this is going to be revamped. They're going to do all this fancy stuff, like just try to make it look better, run better and catch up with the times. And all they really did was make it a smoother experience, adding, you know, more frames per second, but that was about it, I think. Mm-hmm.
But just to kind of expand, like I agreeing with you, but what I kind of meant more specifically was that sometimes objective elements don't stand out, and it's not that like I need breadcrumbs. There are a lot of assets that are kind of like duplicated, you know what I mean? Like there are screens or control consoles or just other kind of random objects throughout the world, and some of them you can walk up to and hit like the button prompt and it'll be like, oh, 007, you have deactivated the enemy satellite. And then other ones are just decorative. And sometimes you don't know the difference and you can accidentally destroy something. And then the game goes, ha, fuck you. You destroyed this important thing. Just start over.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's a video game. It's there to be played for your enjoyment. And you're meant to learn from mistakes. That's fine. It's just a little of the time, you know what I mean? That like they kind of just expected you to figure out through failure to extend replay value.
See, you talk about reusing assets and stuff like that. I mean, what do you mean they reuse assets? There's only like 5 snow levels in this game.
There are 2 snow levels, Josh.
Oh, I don't, they must have been that long that I just was like, oh my God, I'm out in the snow again.
It's Surface and Surface 2, and they're very large levels. I would imagine they might be the largest levels in the game. And, you know, they have a couple objectives scattered around and you're meant to find your way throughout. You mentioned at the top of the episode you liked the level design. So what did you like about the level design? Tell me about that.
Well, I wouldn't even say the level design. I would say overall, I really liked the level where you're running up along the rocket.
The silo. Okay.
Yeah. I really liked that. I liked the layout of that level. I liked just the way that everything was kind of placed, and it just felt fun. And there was like more of an adrenaline rush for that level. It's like, oh man, I really got to get, you know, as high up as possible. So like you're running through and just like bang, 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 you know, doing all of your stuff and, you know, bum, 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 you know,
as he sings the Mission Impossible theme.
Yeah. You know, but no, I liked that. I liked up until this game, all we had were Doom clones.
As you said, yes, yes.
Right. And I think this was the next stage in evolution of first-person shooters until we get Halo.
Okay.
I think this is the... You can see the advancement. You can see it happening. You can see the change in this genre of gaming. But you know it's going to get better. Like,
mm-hmm. Oh, right, right.
It was one of those things, like, I don't want to bash the game because I know how loved it is. And I know when I bash something on this show, people go crazy over it. I feel like this was a stumble to get to the sprint.
A stumble, not a crawl? You think this was like...
I thought this was a stumble. Yeah. I think I didn't really like the way that it controlled. There was so much about this that I just... And I'm not even... trying to poop on it because it's an N64 game or anything along those lines. Like, this is me taking off the mask and just pretty much saying, like, I did my best to... I played it. I beat it. Didn't understand the story at all, but whatever. Maybe I should have watched the movie, but I didn't want to do that either because it's a James Bond film and I don't really care. I thought we had something good going on with Doom, and then this came out and you can tell that it's like so close to being in that three-dimensional, like it's so close to being great.
I mean, it is three-dimensional, let's be clear there.
No, but right, but I'm talking about, like, but when we go to that the Halo era of first person shooters, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's a significant difference in features, quality, fundamentals.
Sure. I mean, I think there's an advancement in terms of features compared to Doom. Obviously, yeah. Not as much as Halo, but, you know, you have a degree of interactivity with the world that I think is very impressive. The fact that you can shoot guards in certain body parts and they'll react. Shoot alarms, shoot through glass windows. And then like something I always liked doing in the facility levels was like I would post up beyond a set of those closing doors. I would shoot at the windows and use them for cover. You know, it let you experiment with the levels like that. And I think that's definitely an advancement, you know, in mm-hmm. terms of where the genre was at the time. And yeah. As you said, where it would go.
Right. Right. And I think the next closest thing to this, but it was on PC, which we talk about, was Rainbow Six. I think those came out around the same time. And Rainbow Six was more of a tactical style shooter, where this was more of the traditional run and gun type.
But you could be tactical in some of the missions. I think the one that encourages you to be the most tactical is possibly the second time you're in the underground facility where you have to escape from the prison cell. And, you know, you got to get around the facility without alerting too many of the guards, but also not getting Natalia killed. So you've got to like really plan it out and figure out which way you're going and, you know, take your time. So I think there are levels that encourage, you know, being a tactician for what it's worth. What did you think about the gun combat, the first person shooter combat? What did you think about it in the Xbox release?
It was weird. Like I don't really know how else to describe. Like I wanted to move around like a normal first person shooter to a certain extent. And like it was there, but everything just felt off. It was almost like they put some sort of filter over top of the original game.
Well, I can confirm that it's not too different except for the twin stick design.
Okay.
But I get what you're saying. Like, there's no iron sights like there are in more modern games.
Mm-hmm. You're mainly just guessing. Like, in it, that was that Doom part, though, right? Because, like, Doom didn't have the crosshairs. It didn't have any of that kind of stuff. You were kind of guessing, like, am I going to hit this thing? Am I not going to hit this thing? Like, I don't know.
Well, that's interesting because something that stood out to me upon playing the Xbox re-release is the fact that, like, So the N64 game, however good it was for its time, going back to it, it is very clunky in terms of aiming with the reticle, because you basically almost have to come to a complete stop. You know what I mean? Like, you can't move and aim.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this game, you have a little bit more freedom because of the twin sticks. But what
your stomach and pat your head.
Absolutely. But the way they compensated for some of that in the N64 game is they had a very generous auto aim. So that if you weren't manually aiming with the reticle, the nozzle of your gun would just kind of guide towards the closest mm-hmm. enemy. And they keep that in the Xbox re-release. The auto aim is still on. So I thought it was kind of easy, honestly, playing the Xbox re-release. I was waltzing through difficulties that I could never get through on the N64 as a kid, because as long as I was, you know, twin sticking into the right position, like, you know, the game would just aim for me. And right.
And I think that's where I'm saying, like, it just felt off, because it felt like I wanted to do this, but the game wanted me to do something else. And it just, like, we were kind of butting heads the entire time. I liked when you get the dual machine guns. I like that part.
So GoldenEye, for me in that regard, is something that, like, I always want in terms of first person shooters. I would call it, I remember calling it the infinite backpack logic of, like, the fact that you could pick up every gun you find in a level and swap between them and dual wield them and whatever. Like, I appreciate games that kind of make you stick to, you know, two primary weapons, because it makes you evaluate how you're going to get through a level. I respect that, but I really love the versatility of GoldenEye letting you do whatever you want. And anytime a shooter goes back to that dynamic of, like, you know, cycle through what you want, use it, I'm always like, yeah, this is the way I want to, you know, go to mm-hmm. town and be a first person shooter badass or whatever.
Yeah, you want everything. You don't want to have to strategize,
because, like, Halo introduced the one primary, one secondary. Yeah. Not introduced, well, at least popularized it.
I mean, because Call of Duty was doing it too. Oh, wait, no, Call of Duty did the infinite backpack too.
I thought Call of Duty was after Halo, or am I getting the order wrong?
Call of Duty 1 came out on PC. Were they around the same time? Maybe 2000?
I could have sworn it was Medal of Honor first, because that was based
that was PS1. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I thought it was Medal of Honor, Halo, Call of Duty. Yell at us in the comments if we're wrong. It's, you know, I like infinite backpacks. You know what I mean? It's fun. And dual wielding in this game is fun.
So, I mean, I presume you've seen the movie.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. This follows pretty faithfully to the movie, but there are a lot of levels regarding things that don't happen in the movie, like the silo, the rocket level, that's mm-hmm. not in the movie. That's not in the movie at all.
What about the jungle?
The jungle is in the movie. It's kind of like the end of the movie. I think in terms of games that are based off movies, this does a very good job of taking what's already there and expanding on it in a way that doesn't hurt, like, the narrative of the movie. The silo, it didn't happen, but they still tie it into General Arumov. He's the guy at the end of Silo who, when you catch up to him, he's, like, firing at you from the end of the hallway, and then he starts mm-hmm. sprinting. That's not in the movie, but, like, it's kind of a good entry point for him to come into the narrative of the game. You know what I mean? Like, it gives you an earlier introduction to him than you would get in the movie. And it's kind of like, oh, cool, they built a level around expanding how
his development. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is very good. And not all the levels even play out that way. Like, if you recall the level where you had to save all the hostages from the boat and put a tracking device on the helicopter.
Yep.
So in the movie, the way that scene plays out is the bad guys are going to steal this helicopter from a public demonstration. And the way they do that is they kidnap the pilots, put on their clothes, and they go to the demonstration to steal the helicopter. Well, James realizes it, like, way too late, and he runs to the boat while there's, like, a crowd of people there, and the guards, like, tackle James and pin him down as James watches the helicopter get away. Like, he was too late. And, like, in the movie, that's, like, a 3-minute scene. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? The baddies get away with the helicopter. So how do they handle it in the game? We'll have rescuing the actual people be an objective. And then instead of James failing to stop the helicopter from getting taken, he'll put a tracking bug on it so he can see where they're going next. You know what I mean? Like, they expand on it in a way that I think works.
I just wanted to try to get that idea, because video game movies usually never work.
Sure.
Or they're just very sloppily done. And, you know, from what you're saying here, it just seems like it's a give and take between the two. Or it's like they each respect each other to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Or I should say the game respects the movie.
Yeah.
I don't think the movie gives a shit about the game.
Well, this came out 2 years after the movie. That's what's funny about this too, because this was going to be a side scrolling Super Nintendo game. And then it was going to be a rail shooter before they got to where they were. And so, you know, they had plenty of time after the movie came out to figure out what worked and what didn't. So it's not like they were racing to meet a release date.
Well, that would have been close then to the next movie, right? Which would have been what? No World for Tomorrow?
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Starring.
No World for Tomorrow is a Coheed album.
Claudio is not in Tomorrow Never Dies.
No, unfortunately.
Recent Oscar winner Michelle Yeoh is in Tomorrow Never Dies. Here's a question for you real quick. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about Tomorrow Never Dies, did you play the PlayStation 1 movie tie-in for that game?
No.
Okay.
No, I know James Bond. I'm like, nah.
Not at all. Okay. Because
I think Nightfire was like the one that was kind of like Spy Hunter, where you had the car.
That was a PlayStation 2 installment. And yeah, there were car levels in that. Yeah.
I remember that.
Okay.
That's about it.
Do you remember why you played that one? Not being a James Bond fan? No.
It must have been at somebody's house and they were playing it or something like that. And I'm just like, well, do you want to play? I'm like, I guess.
Okay, fair enough.
What's one of them PS2 things? I've never seen one of them. Is that like a DVD player? So one thing that this game is known for is its multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
And people love to talk about, oh, wait till I play you in insert GoldenEye level here with insert GoldenEye character here and chop, chop, chop or paintballs or whatever the hell you guys talk about. Why is the multiplayer, why does it still hold up to this day, Tom?
I would disagree that it holds up to this day.
Okay, good, because I don't think it does.
Well, the Xbox version didn't even have
it. I know. It was so bad that they didn't even put it in the game.
Well, the Xbox version keeps the local multiplayer, but Nintendo outbid them to get online multiplayer when I think that is kind of hilarious given how bad Nintendo's internet is.
Mm-hmm.
What I think holds up for it is the customization options that this game had. You could set a lot of different specifics when you started a match. You could pick which weapons are available. You could pick, obviously, which stage you play on, game modes, objectives that end the round or whatever. And then, like, basically every character model that is present in the game and some other ones that they put in here for fun are selectable. So you could have all kinds of crazy combinations. They have like classic James Bond villains like Jaws and Oddjob in there. You would have to try very hard to have the same kind of matchup twice on purpose. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it was that degree of variety that I think made it so fun. And the joke you were making, which has kind of become like one of the catchphrases, it's slappers only, no odd job, blah, blah, blah. Like, it comes from the fact that, like, there's a mode, and I've played it, where you can set the weapon options to just be no weapons. It's just the default unarmed karate chop.
Yeah.
And then you can set it to insta-kill. Basically, you're chasing everybody around the map trying to karate chop them and kill them in one hit. And it's comical. It's hilarious. It's just comical shenanigans.
It's rockets mode in Halo.
There you go.
We're only going to play with rockets. Yeah, I get that.
Absolutely. So yeah, and also I just think it's the fact that, again, this came out on the N64. I'm not slagging any PlayStation faithful, but this had four controller ports. You could have four people playing a first-person shooter together at a sleepover at your friend's house, and that wasn't predominant at the time. If you wanted to do Doom, you'd have to have four people with four PCs. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's one console. You sit on the couch or on the floor and you have fun, and that, at the time, was, you know, a novelty that left, a big impression on a lot of people.
And, you know, we talk about a big impression. Like, why do you think it still holds up to this day? Or why do you think people still think it holds up to this day?
I think it's very generational, but I also think it's because of, again, the variety. I have tried to go back to my N64 copy of this, but I think it controls pretty roughly. Going back into this on the Xbox was a thrill because I could get into the good parts of this game without the problems of the controls for me personally. You know, like, I could go up to those higher difficulties and try to do levels of more objectives where you have to, you know, get a picture of a piece of equipment, or you had to not alert enemies that you could steal something. when this game works, there's a lot in it that makes it exciting, but it's really hard to go back to that N64 version.
Let me ask a follow-up then. On the Switch, can you use the N64 controller for this?
You basically have to, because even as much as I'm saying it didn't control great on the N64 controller, the whole layout of like the Switch Joy-Con or Pro Controller defaults is really bad. Like, I know that there are GoldenEye communities that have concocted like the perfect Switch console button remap to make the game playable. And that just comes down to, like, you know, Nintendo not putting button mapping into the games or anything, which is remains a problem no matter what you're playing. It's bad. This controls best on the Xbox, I will say it. I think that's the best way to play this game currently.
Okay.
We're getting to the end of things, but I did want to ask, what was your favorite gun, Josh, given the variety that we had?
Like I said, I think the part where you pick up the two machine guns, the white machine guns, like
the
little Uzis.
The Klob?
I think so.
The ones that goes like that one?
No. I thought they were white with like a black stripe on them.
I mean, the only kind of light colored machine gun you can. Oh, maybe it was the RCP-70s. You get those for defeating Xenia in the jungle. So that could have been that. It's just funny because like the Klob is kind of considered like the Magikarp of guns in this game. So I was kind of like,
no, it was that? Not. It was not that. I'm looking at them right now. It was definitely not that.
Okay.
What about you?
On this playthrough, I think the AR-33 assault rifle is like the best late game gun because it can penetrate through enemies. So like if you line two guys up, you can knock two of them out at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that was always really satisfying. I really liked, it's the gun I call like the D5K Dushku, like Eliza Dushku.
The Eliza Dushku?
Yeah, the Eliza Dushku. It's so funny, like these guns are like modeled on real world guns, but they have these like legally distinct names. And I don't know if that's because of Nintendo or what, but the one thing I just will always laugh at is James Bond's default gun is the Walter PPK.
Mm-hmm.
And in this game, it's called the PP7. And I just will never get over the memory of like one of my grade school classmates being like, yeah, it's called that because you got to shoot guys in the peepee seven times with it. Like he lived by that logic. He was like, yeah, that's why they call it that. That must be why.
I mean, I'm down for that. It must have been the Eliza Dushkus.
The Eliza Dushkus? Okay. Because
you can get two of them, right?
You can get two of them. You can get two of any gun in the game. That's what's really cool. It's like you can do
it. Yeah. It must have been the Eliza Dushku.
It was really interesting.
What do people have to say about this game,
Tom? I was going
to
say, it is really interesting hearing your opinions on this game, but we also have some audience answers. We asked...
We have people whose opinions matter more, okay?
Well, I mean, they keep the show going, so, you
That's
know.
True. That's true.
Shut up, Josh. No.
Okay. Oh, that just made somebody happy.
Who? The cats?
Probably.
Yeah. So our first response comes in. We asked listeners of our podcast to tell us what they thought of GoldenEye back in the day or what they thought of the new release. So the first one we got is from the Washed Up Gamer Dads podcast at WUGD podcast. Mm-hmm. They said, easily some of the most fun multiplayer I had in the era. Music was exceptional and gameplay was spot on. Favorite part being a child while playing it, shooting my PP7. Yeah, that's a good point. What did you think about the music in this game, Josh?
I liked it. Yeah. I thought for N64, I thought the music was really good. I thought it was a good digital version of like the themes of James Bond and stuff like that. And I thought it fit the world fine.
Really clever. Like it's almost like a xylophone and synth is like the majority mm-hmm. of the soundtrack. Yeah. It works. Did you like the pause music?
I did. Okay, it's not the Battletoads pause music, but it's good.
Ooh, Josh, top pause music themes.
I mean, Battletoads goes number one. Yeah, like that's just mm-hmm. just jams.
It is.
There's another one that really slaps, though.
Okay.
What about you?
I mean, I'm going to stand for this. It's really. I don't own the smartwatches, but like, if I ever did, I've seen tons of people download little like kind of customizable apps to turn their smartwatch interface into the GoldenEye watch, I would do that in a heartbeat if I ever got one. Well, of course, I'd be a fool to not also mention further rare champions, Banjo-Kazooie. Bum, ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. It's just like a slow, chill version of the actual theme to, you know, get, like, hey, just so you know, while you're taking a break, this is what you're missing.
This is what you're missing.
Is pause music a lost art?
It is. It is 100%. But I mean, I think it's because we got rid of the pause button.
Sure. Now it's just the system button or the menu button.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a shame.
RIP we'll start and select.
RIP.
RIP black and white buttons from the Xbox.
How awkwardly placed they were. Moving on to our next audience response, we have Jake from Welcome to Game Corp. Jake says,
I know him.
You do? You do? And you know, it's interesting. Jake kind of has a little bit of middle ground between the two of us. I played it when it first came out all those years ago. It was my first modern FPS, as it was for a lot of people, and I thought the concept was really cool. Little Jake wasn't a Bond fan, however, and the setting bored me to tears. Had some fun slap-chopping my cousin in multiplayer, though. So I think it's really interesting that, like, even though both you and Jake aren't Bond people, you still found things to like about this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, just because you don't like something, like, I'm not a huge fan of Rob Thomas's voice, but I'll still listen to Matchbox 20. You know what I mean? Like,
I thought you were going to say Santana's.
Smooth.
Yeah, but you went right for Matchbox 20. Okay.
Yeah. No, but that's the thing. Like, you cannot be a fan to respect it, right? Look at how long we've gone hating John Cena.
Well, the thing is, I have
still got to respect that. You got to respect that man.
Yeah. I still don't like the majority of his early career, but yes, you're right. I do respect.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Josh, how much respect are you willing to share when it comes down to our final question?
Skip, play, beat, or complete? Skip it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was a lightning in a bottle thing, and you're never going to get those memories back. So just don't live in the past anymore.
If you're going to play this out of any kind of historical curiosity, the Xbox version is the best version to play. I don't think the N64 version, and by extension, the Switch version, are going to be worth your time. There are cool things in here, despite some of the things that haven't aged well. And, you know, if you're a Bond fan, if you enjoy the movie, you're probably going to be more inclined to see it through to the end. And that's great if you do. I enjoyed beating this. I almost 100%ed it. I got one of the secret levels open. But, you know, overall, I was satisfied getting to kind of re-experience this. But I don't blame anybody that it's not for. The historical precedent, give it at least a little bit of a try so you can see where the genre was at the time, you know?
I just thought of something, and we didn't even talk about it at all. This isn't the first time GoldenEye has been somewhat remade or re-released at all.
You are right,
Tom.
No, you are absolutely right. There was the first Wii-exclusive remake, GoldenEye 007, and then there was GoldenEye 007 Reloaded on Xbox 360 and PS3. Have you experienced those?
But then wasn't there also Agent?
Oh.
Which was the sequel?
So GoldenEye Rogue Agent was part of EA's tenure of having the GoldenEye license. And they wanted to cash in on the popularity of GoldenEye. But, you know, they didn't own the rights. So they made this game where you play a fellow MI6, which is like British CIA, a fellow MI6 agent who gets fired. And so they join a league of a bunch of Bond villains like Goldfinger and Saramanca. And they give him an electronic bionic golden eye. And then they go on missions to like take over the world. And that's why it's called Golden Eye. It's basically like a poor man's kill zone, if I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
I played it. I did not enjoy it compared to like Nightfire and the other EA games. I think it's pretty rough in terms of what they were trying. I think it's a pretty cringe attempt to cash in on the GoldenEye license. Like, I don't know. It'd be like a Halo spiritual successor where it's like, we have put this ring above your head. You are going to be Sergeant Halo. You know what I mean?
It's
it's not great.
And now what about the Wii re-release, remake, remaster of it?
So, yeah, that was a very deliberate attempt to remake the game. they remade it with Daniel Craig standing in for James Bond, and it follows most of the plot points of the movie about, you know, a rogue agent and a Russian super weapon and stuff like that. It has a lot of Call of Duty vibes that I know some people were not very happy with. Like, a lot of the mechanics are just too similar to what we had at the time, you know, Modern Warfare 2, Black Ops.
I was gonna say, that came out around the same time as Modern Warfare and stuff, right? So that's...
Yeah, that era of Call of Duty, yeah. Yeah.
So Nintendo needed their version of it.
Yeah, yeah. So Nintendo got it first, and they had it for a year. And I know that the Wii version was very popular because of the accuracy of using the Wiimote as a pointer, almost like using a mouse cursor to shoot. So I know it had a very dedicated fan base that I believe still continues today through private servers. However, this did get remade about a year later for the 360 and the PS3. It was called GoldenEye Reloaded. A friend of the show, Gilgs, was very, very hype on those remakes. He enjoyed it a lot. I haven't gotten to try it. One of my roommates in college, your twin brother, played the Wii version a lot, and I watched some of that, you know what I mean? I don't have any personal experience with it, and I'm guessing you probably don't either, given your distaste for Bond.
No, okay. I just remembered them as we were closing out the conversation. I say skip, you say play for historical reasons and purposes.
Sure.
Right? Once again, GoldenEye is on the list of rare games that are not good.
All right.
So until next time.
Hold on. No. This real quick. What are good rare games? I need to hear from you, Josh. You shot down Banjo-Kazooie. You're shooting GoldenEye. What's a good rare game, Josh?
Battletoads 2020.
Rare didn't develop that.
Okay, then never mind. Rare's in it. There's a part where the Battletoads are signing autographs, and they have a giant Rare Studios logo behind them. And I thought that was really funny.
I mean, because they own the IP. Well, I mean, Microsoft owns the IP now, but
Does Shovel Knight get counted because the Battletoads are in Shovel Knight?
No, it doesn't. That's not a Rare developed game. You know, I'm nice to Souls games, Josh.
I know. So nice. Did you ever finish Bloodborne?
No.
Okay. Did I beat GoldenEye? Yeah. Did I beat Banjo-Kazooie? Yeah.
I beat Elden Ring.
Okay.
So we're 2 for 2. All right. So now if I ever want to cover Jet Force Gemini on the podcast, I got to beat Dark Souls 3. Got it.
If you like this stuff, make sure to follow us, subscribe, do all that fancy things. We're everywhere, especially Deezer, because that's our favorite place to be. Of all of the locations that this you can find this show is on Deezer.
And if you're watching this on youtube.com/@badelephantgaming, slap that subscribe and like button. You would be our best friend if you did that.
Yeah. At least Tom's. I already have too many best friends.
It's the one right here.
All right, but until next time, we will see you in the future.
And I'm Tom. Why'd you use your name?
I completely forgot. While we boot up the Triflex Capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. This show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, or future of gaming, check out Bad Elephant Gaming on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And don't forget to watch our other videos on YouTube, where we bring you gaming experiences you'll never forget.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun. Come chat with us anytime at twitch.tv/badelephantgaming.
Thanks for listening.
And until next time, we'll see you in the future.